You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
And our words of invocation this morning come from a 12th century Japanese writer called Shinran Shonin. He was somebody who took Buddhism from the temples and the monasteries to the ordinary people. Let us take refuge in the light universal. As the light of life is boundless, those who walk within the light are free from the lie of affirmation or denial. We seek refuge in the light which is beyond our understanding, knowing our liberation. We take refuge in this world, in its beauty, its wisdom, and its radiance. By that light is the darkness of the three worlds enlightened, and those that are within the light, having moved from ignorance and denial, move into the life which is greater and compassionate. Now, the theme of our gathering today is wonder and where it takes us.
J.A. Baker's The Peregrine was published in 1967 and remains today one of the most significant pieces of nature writing. Set in the Essex Marshes, northeast of London, when the Peregrine was in deep decline, his book is a hymn to a place, a bird, a time, and an explorer. Beyond the line of poplars, he circled and began to soar again. This time, he pulled across the wind, rising swiftly to the northwest, moving far out and very high above the river valley, gliding, spiraling, hovering, sculling. He seemed to be freed at last from his orchard obsession. Free! You cannot know what freedom means till you have seen a peregrine loosed into the warm spring sky to roam at will along the escarpments of the river Ere. He rose with martial motion, like a dolphin in green seas, like an otter in the startled water. He poured through deep lagoons of sky up to the high white reefs of Cirrus. When my arms were aching and I could watch him no longer, he blurred into a tiny speck and vanished from the bright circle of my vision. Soon I found him again and saw him grow larger. Gradually, steadily, he grew larger. From thousands of feet above the valley, he was diving back to the orchard, which he was not yet ready to leave completely. He grew from a speck to a blur, to a bird, to a hawk, to a peregrine, a winged head shouldering down through the wind. With a rush, with a flash, with a whirr of wings, he came down to the hedge, 10 yards away from me. He perched, he preened, he looked around. not tired, not even tested by his half hour of festive flight. With the whole valley to choose from, he had chosen to come back to the orchard where I was standing. There is a bond, impalpable, indefinable, but it exists.
So wonder and where it takes us. And I know that this has been a conversation this month here at the Unitarian Meeting House. And I'd like to get us wondering about wonder and wonder where wonder may take us in our journeys alone and together. Life is wonderful after all, especially if you spend many of your days in hospital, as I do, as a spiritual care chaplain. Sometimes a particular experience will jolt us into a life-changing Damascus Road kind of wonder. The first reading, if we had heard it, was about the Australian author and essayist Barbara Blackman climbing a mountain in New South Wales with a group of Aboriginal people. Barbara Blackman lost her sight aged 17, married to the artist Charles Blackman. She has been a profound influence and shaper of Australian culture, and her senses became more alive even though she lost the ability to see with her eyes. And moving to the other side of the world, J.A. Baker's Pilgrimage with Peregrines in the Marshes of Essex and the book he wrote have been life-changing for many people. Because writers, including Dr. Seuss, who we heard earlier on, influence us. They cause us to experience the world and our relationships in new and different ways. And often authors, when they share their challenges, help us to face our challenges with courage and with compassion. For Barbara Blackman, it was dealing with the alcoholism of her husband and ongoing poverty. For J.A. Baker, it was a crippling, progressive disease that caused him to die relatively young and caused his effort to be with the places and the birds that he loved to be gradually taken away from his grasp. Wonder, where does it take you? How can it move you not to a sense just of radical amazement, but to life-changing experiences, to embed itself in your understanding of yourself as a spiritual being, a meaning-making being, someone who contemplates life as it is, people who want their contemplation to flow into action. Let me share now with you a couple of experiences, one a moment in time, the other an ongoing experience that moved me to wonders. Well, I always grew up watching birds in the garden, but my real love and commitment to watching birds and appreciating birds came when I was in the British Armed Forces and I did a deployment to the Falkland Islands. Now, it was a very tough deployment, even though the country wasn't then by war, but there was a lot to do. So I sought solace in birds, and the way that as an Air Force chaplain, I could move around the islands to visit various people and the local people as well. So I had my own Land Rover, and I often used to fly off to remote places on helicopters. So the bird life there was sensational, and unlike growing up in Britain, by and large, it tended not to be frightened of human beings because the birds there hadn't encountered many human beings, perhaps fortunately for them. But not long after living in Australia, I was up at Burra. And if you know Burra well, you know that there's a huge open-cast deserted mine. And there their nest, peregrines, peregrine falcon, the fastest living animal in the world. And I could see them through my binoculars, not far away on that human-constructed cliff face, surrounded by feral pigeons flying here and there. And there was the tercel, the male, the smaller of the two. And there was the falcon, the female. And there was a nest there as well. And I thought that I could see some chicks there. I'd seen peregrines before, particularly at falconry centres in the UK. But suddenly the falcon and the tercel took off, and the falcon climbed higher and higher and higher and higher till she was but a dot in the sky. And then down she came at over 200 miles an hour. And suddenly, through my binoculars, or perhaps I put my binoculars down by that time because it was simply too much of a moment, she connected and she collided with a feral pigeon flying horizontally. So there is a peregrine vertically, the pigeon flying horizontally. There was an absolute explosion. And I recollect being jolted backwards by that experience. All my senses became alive. I felt actually in this death a sense of quite joy and liberation. A lot of my life has been around death and being with people who are dying, and death can be a joyful, liberating experience. It was a fierce, wonderful moment for me, a moment of privilege to witness that in a bird which is still rare around the world today, even though in Europe it's recovered, and thanks to human beings it's begun nesting on churches and buildings around Europe. Now here's my second experience. Although I run my own philosophical counselling and meditation training business, I work at Queen Elizabeth Hospital as a spiritual care chaplain, and this week I'll also be working at the Royal Adelaide Hospital. So let me know anybody that's there, and I'd be happy, or members of the team can visit there. We have a terrific interfaith team, Buddhists and Muslims and Christians and others, and we visit people and encourage them wherever they are. There's always room for a suitably qualified UU visitor as well if you'd like to join our team of volunteers. So down at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital, every Monday afternoon I visit Crammond Ward, which is the psychiatric ward. And often I take with me a little bowl where I might have some feathers, some wool, some pebbles and some seashells. And we practice there some brief mindfulness exercises. And often with the people who are there, they're actually called customers, I think. No, consumers, that's right. Or patients. Patience is about waiting. And sometimes it goes well, sometimes it doesn't, for the reasons that you might guess. But we do try and focus on our five senses: touching, smelling, sometimes tasting, and experiencing something which is outside of ourselves. Because we may have snow dome minds where things are going on all the time, but people in that situation, often they are weighed down by the static inside their minds and in their bodies. And I encourage them when they leave to walk in the park, to get outside, to look at the sky, and to be in nature. Wonder and where it takes us. There is a movement around at the moment called rewilding. Have you heard this term? Rewilding. And it's not about the main street on Norwood when the pubs close either. It's really about, sorry if I've offended any of you who might have been there last night. But rewilding is not just reconnecting with nature, because that's a bit kind of dualistic, but it's coming to understand that we as human beings are talking animals, that we become most healthy when we are in a natural environment, when we live in a sensory rich environment that is natural and life-giving. It also has a name, eco-psychology as well. So wonder comes when we begin to cultivate our senses. And those of you who practice mindfulness will know that one part of mindfulness, although I'd like to add there are more parts to mindfulness than that, is coming to re-inhabit our body, paying attention to our five senses, those five channels into which pour massive amount of meditation, of information, which we then learn to navigate, which means that we cut out some things and we focus on other things. Because I've worked in the corporate world, often the corporate world of offices and of cars, mercifully under air conditioning today, can be very sensory poor. Very sensory poor. There's nothing there really to draw us out. It's a very unnatural environment looking into a screen. And sometimes we compensate with that by spooning in the sensory sugar in the entertainment that we immerse ourselves in, which is often very noisy and flashing and overloads our senses. And that swing back and forth often doesn't bring out the best of us. It can really bring out not necessarily the best part of who we are as human beings. Now, Aristotle says that we have five senses. What are these five senses? There are our visual sense, our binocular vision, which tends to be the sense that most of us use most of all, unless we're Barbara Blackman. There's feeling inside and outside of our body. Some people have, not all of the senses work as well, and some lack that sense. There is tasting. And if you're one of my friends is a retired honey taster, and other people are tea tasters, and there are wine tasters who have trained that sense of tasting, which is often lost in the diet that we eat. Then there's that sense of smell and of hearing as well. Now, in medieval times, medieval writers say, and this is something that I picked up from a book called Rewilding by a British naturalist called Nick Baker. He says that in medieval times, there were what he called 10 wits. Now, that's not the church council here, that the 10 wits are the five senses. But he says that there, in medieval times, there were other wits as well. So there was a sense of common sense, which we know is common because it's not that common, is it, really, after all? Common sense, instinct, imagination, fantasy, and memory. Common sense, instinct, imagination, fantasy, and memory. Don't you love that? 10 wits. There's something that you can tell members of your family get home. What did I learn this morning at the meeting house? Oh, I learned about the 10 wits. In some cultures, people practice extreme forms of spirituality. We can see pictures of, particularly in India, of sadhus who have so despised their body that they hold their hand up in the air for 5 years. What happens? It atrophies. And when you're in hospital for a long time, we want to keep people moving. Even when you're on your mattress, we need to kind of keep you moving because things begin to atrophy within ourselves. Things begin to slow down. So part of the call of being, of deepening a sense of wonder and of radical amazement that changes the world, is to come back, I think, and re-inhabit and celebrate our 10 wits as individuals and in community. Many of us now are becoming nature deprived, particularly children. We don't want to let them outside, and very often children are too often stuck as we are in front of a screen. So being in nature, telling stories, practicing hobbies where we use our hands, being among children are great for us, and they often bring out our best selves. So how might we address this in our own lives and gently encourage others to do the same? Well, getting out of doors, we have to do carefully at this time of the year. It's very easy to become dehydrated. But we can, even for a little while, take a walk under the trees and listen to the birdsong. And if you go to the Royal Adelaide Hospital, we're not supposed to call it the new Royal Adelaide Hospital now, because that's confusing. It is the Royal Adelaide Hospital. It's full of gardens. It is full of gardens, it is full of trees, and even on the top floor, the little areas there where you can sit outside and feel the breeze on your faces. All the rooms have opening windows to let in the natural breeze. So attention has been paid there. At my own substantive hospital, the Queen Elizabeth, we have lovely gardens there as well. And not so long ago, when I was caring for a Narangeri woman in ICU, I persuaded the staff, who are wonderful people, we turned the bed around so she could see a tree out of the window. That was such a special thing for her before she died. So getting out of doors, it's good for us as long as it's safe to do so. When you go outdoors, try not all the time to wear those headphones clamped to your head. Okay, and if you have other people who listen to music, encourage them to turn it down. We're going to have a really hearing impaired population in the future with all of those fat 89 decibels and more pumping through our head. It's okay from time to time, but spend time with writers who celebrate nature. Wendell Berry, the American writer, says about the Bible that you have to read it out of doors. It's such an out-of-doors book. And whenever Jesus goes indoors, he seems to get into trouble. But outdoors, he teaches his disciples. Australia Day, even though it's problematic, the gathering around the barbecue outdoors, that is a ritual. It just needs some work done on it, doesn't it? Some of our rituals, like Anzac Day, Australia Day, They do good things, but they need work done on them to make them more inclusive. There are fantastic nature writers around today. There's a resurgence of nature writers. Particularly, I'm interested in UK writers because I come from the UK. But Barbara Blackman, that I keep referring to, there are many what we call sense of place authors who are writing here in Australia, fantastic people who celebrate what it is to be in a particular place, in that habitat, in your body at that particular time, who celebrate that place and portray it in art, in literature, in storytelling, and in song. So to become an arts patron and to sponsor that and encourage it is a good thing. Now, the third challenge that I place before you, or the third call on your life, is to moderate screen time. And I'm very into the screen, and I love making PowerPoints, but I deliberately decided not to make one for today to give you all a bit of a break from it, because it is such a powerful medium. So you're using your ear gate a little bit more today. We do tend now to focus everything through our laptop, through our social media apps, through tweeting, and particularly through our smartphones. As you walk through Rundle Mall, you have to be very careful now to avoid knocking into people. What that does is that that really helps our atrophy, our senses to atrophy. if we live more and more through a screen. And I'm as much guilty as many people. I have to write all my hospital notes into EPAS, and I tweet, all of those kind of things. But really, I have to say to myself, well, turn it off and come back to real life, Nicholas. I can answer that email later on. And when I'm not on call, I can turn my phone off overnight. So this may not be an issue for you, but it is a massive and growing issue within our culture. And on the one hand, we're mesmerized, increasingly so, by our technology, not using it as a tool, but as an end in itself. And on the other hand, we're living in the realm of what is called the Anthropocene, human narcissism, massive species extinction. And we're cut off from that because it's wonderful to look at David Attenborough on the screen, but we forget, hello, that there's a world out there. It's not either or, but it is about coming to our wits, coming to our wits, deepening our experience. So to conclude, get out there when you can. Read books that look at art that connects with a sense of time and a place. And fast occasionally from media, and be careful about how you use your screens. J.A. Baker, cycling out into the Essex countryside, had a sense of freedom and of an interspecies communion with the fierce peregrine falcon that he hunted, not with a gun, but simply sought to serve and be present to it. And that's what we really need, to develop a deep sense of communion and intercommunion with each other as human beings, which is why we have the sense of spiritual community, and with other species as well. Now, before you ask me if I'm being sponsored by the Coca-Cola company, this is from an exhibition at the Guggenheim in New York. And the Zero Collective were a group of German artists who began after the Second World War. It was about beginning again, starting life over and again. And they particularly wanted to encapsulate natural things and phenomena into their art form. So it has a little legend on the back, but that's the meaning of the zero. Starting from now, we can move out and make our lives count, can we not? That was a sort of joke. So as we sit here, I invite you just to hold your hands up in front if you're able to do so, and just keep your hands gently closed. Go, may you live in wonder, and for wonder, experiencing your own aliveness and the aliveness of the people and animals that surround you. And so as we gently now feel our hands unfolding like a flower, with open hands and open hearts and open lives full of joy, not taking ourselves too seriously, may we go from here in the cool of our aliveness. Amen.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianessay@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching Essay Unitarians.